As we pointed out last week, I don't think we really know if we have to go through all of chapter Yud Zayin. I mean, there's one... Okay. We'll move quickly through it. Where were we up to in chapter Yud Zayin? I'll do it. Okay, done. About 40, yeah? What we basically said was the idea of chapter 17 is an idea that has been expressed time and time again in the Sifrei HaNeviim. And here, the entire chapter is devoted to this one idea. And that one idea is that our interpretation of history is different than anyone else's interpretation. Others will interpret historic events by virtue of economic factors, social factors, military factors. And we know all of these things are certainly that which happens, galui la'ayin, to the eye of man of flesh and blood. He sees that, military reasons. But we see beyond that, because we believe that there is a divine hand that moves history. Just a little item. Yesterday, what hand of God was seen yesterday in the world? Hong Kong. River Hong Kong. And do you know why Hong Kong happened? Because the British didn't keep their promise to Klal Yisrael. Because they sent boats back to Europe. Because they sent Jews to Cyprus. Because they gave positions over to the Arabs. That's why the beginning of the end of the British Empire started right here in Eretz Yisrael. I see Hong Kong clearly as Yad Hashem. Do you know what remains in the hands of the British today? The Falkland Islands, very good. Gibraltar. I think the Virgin Islands are someplace near there. Do you know what we're talking about? We are talking Gurmish, exactly.
And they were ready
and willing to fight. But there's no question about it that the sun is setting. The question is, will it rise? It does. Over London, it doesn't rise. Will her son? You understand? In other words, if one were to read all the articles that have been written about Hong Kong, and I'll tell you the truth, I haven't read any of the articles. They will give you all of the reasons why Hong Kong went back to the Chinese. And all of them have elements of truth, but all of them have elements of truth on the superficial level that men of flesh and blood is able to see. But an imam in Be'emunah Shleima, that Hong Kong is the end of the British Empire. And the end of the British Empire came because they deserved. They deserved. It's the end of all. There are no more empires left. It means nationalism that began at the end of the last century, the beginning of this century, has swept the world. And as I pointed out time and time again, nationalism had only one success throughout the globe, and that success was Eretz Yisrael. All the rest was a brachah l'batalah. All the rest was a waste. And ultimately, all of the empires crumbled. And by the way, they all crumbled because of the Jews. They all crumbled because of the Jews. And this is not chauvinistic history. The Germans, the Russians, and the British. The French. From the moment that De Gaulle became angry, like David Levy, he became angry with Israel, Algeria became for him the end of the French Empire. Of course, Canadians will say it's when he came to Montreal in 67 and he said, Vive le Québec libre. Nobody cares about Vive le Québec libre. There's no question about it. No, but that's the way, the difference, how one looks at a history. Perek Yud Zayin in Malachim Bet tells us that there is a divine hand. History is the architect of history, the author of history is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. There's no question about it. This is not far-fetched. I mean, when nobody stood up against the communist empire, who stood up against the communist empire? Nobody. The only ones who stood up against the communist empire were
the Jews,
that's all. Nobody else. All of the Greek Orthodox Church, a glicht angelicht, as they would say in Yiddish. Nobody did anything. The only ones were the Jews. Kmo binyan kubiyot, like a house of blocks of cards. That's exactly. No question about it. The British, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. The Queen's. The Queen, I don't know why the Queen has no nachas on her children. I don't understand that. Maybe that's part of it, but I don't know. Was she bad? I don't know if she was so bad. She wasn't so bad.
Now, we're learning the law, we see what kind of nachas some of the Queen had for their children.
Yeah, I don't know, but I understand, but I don't know. Queen Elizabeth, I don't know.
She never came to visit Israel, I never gave her approval, I never said a good word about
her. Oh, okay, all right. All right, okay, there's the violent nationalists. Yes.
I think Hong Kong can be a lesson for us also, because there's some suggestions
that
Lee Syrian
heights,
go in heights
for 50
years,
100
years,
yeah.
See what's
going to
happen then.
Yeah, that's very short-sighted. In other words, in the longer view of history, we have to take a look at, what happened to Hong Kong.
I think that's why the timing is so significant for us. They just started to be talking to the Syrians. And there was
just at the time that Hong Kong is...
comes to remind the Jews.
Will they be reminded? Anyway, that's chapter Yud Zayin. It's a very difficult chapter for me to learn out. We'll start with Pasuk Yud Dalet. V'lo Shameyu, God had sent prophets day in and day out. He sent prophets to warn them. V'lo Shameyu, they didn't listen. By Yakshua Torpam Kodef Avotam, and they hardened the. They stiffened their necks like the necks of their fathers. Asheloh Aminu. This pasuk we had learned. Asheloh Aminu b'Hashem Elokeihem. And I translated it not as that they did not believe in, they didn't trust in. They believed him but didn't trust him. And they rejected his laws, his priesthood, and his covenant that he had made with their fathers, and the testimony that which he had warned them. That was the essence of last week's shiur, where I showed you from both Yirmiyahu and from Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, and Hosea, that Hevel is Mitzrayim. They're going after placing their trust and their faith in other nations is a terrible, terrible mistake. You can't trust anybody. They followed the nations around them that God had commanded them not to do like those nations. They forsook all of the mitzvahs of God, their God, Shnei Agolim, they made for themselves a graven image, two calves. One, of course, was the one that was Yerovah made it, one in Bethel and one in Dun. And by the way, it originally, and I pointed this out a number of times, it was not intended as idol worship. It was intended as another place to serve God. But it was only with the passage of time that they moved completely away from God. They made the Asherah, and they bowed down to the hosts of the heavens, and they served Baal. And they caused their sons and daughters to go between the fires. This is a machloket Rashi and the Ramban. In Sefer Yikra, where it talks about Molech, there are those whose opinion is that Molech was simply the... taking a child through between the two pillars of fire, and yes, there are some who say that it was in fact burning their children. And they resorted to to magic. Kesem is, by the way, the only one that we know of that resorted to magic was Ezevel. See, I want to point out over here also that when broad, all-encompassing statements are made about all Klal Yisrael, it doesn't necessarily mean that all Jews followed black magic. It means some did. But as we have pointed out also again in the past, the idea behind this barak is there were those who did, and there were those who didn't object. Or didn't object vociferously enough, and therefore one becomes an accessory to the crime. Yes, Malka? Yes? Yeah, but it says the same thing in Torah, and despite that, there's a machloket in the Mefarshim, whether it means to into the fire or only between the fire. Rashi says between. Vayinacheshu. And they did. Vayinacheshu is. That's also one of the kinds of magic. And in a sense, Vayinacheshu, more than Kosein. Well, even both of them is the idea of wanting to know the future. These were ways and means by which to know the future. Huh? Does it have to do with the word Nachash? I think it does. The Mefarshim say something that has to do something with some kind of form of divining, but I don't know exactly. And they gave themselves over. You know, it's like the word that we, what do we use about somebody who is addicted lehitmaker or machur lesamim, addicted. The only one about whom it says that he was mitmaker was about Achav. So it doesn't necessarily mean that all Jews had become addicted to do that which was evil in the eyes of God. Vayitarnaf Hashem Yehov Yisrael, God get very angry with Israel. Vayisidei mi'alponov, and he removed them from before his face. Lo nishar rak Shevet Yehuda levado. The only one that remained was Shevet Yehuda alone. Gam Yehuda lo shamar et mitzvot Hashem Elokeinu. We are being prepared over here for what is going to come. There are going to be two terrible, terrible periods in the history of Yehuda. There are going to be two very great periods in the history of Yehuda as well. Gam Yehuda lo shamar et mitzvot Hashem Elokeinu. Yehuda also didn't keep the mitzvot of God. They got Yehuda b'chukot Yisrael asher osu. They went in the ways of Yisrael. The things that they did rubbed off on Yehuda. And that, of course, was the tragic mistake of Yehoshaphat. That we pointed out, Yehoshaphat's mistake, that was the beginning of Malachim Bet, the mistake of Yehoshaphat was that he became a mechitten with Achav, and the reason why he became a mechitten with Achav was because he wanted to have an influence on the house of Achav, but it didn't work that way. You know, Kiruv Rechokim can be very, very dangerous for one's Yiddishkeit, because sometimes the kiruv rechokim turns into richuk krovim, and that's exactly what happened over here. Instead of Yehoshaphat having great influence on the house of Achav, it was the house of Achav that had influence on the house of Yehoshaphat. Not so much Yehoshaphat as Yehoshaphat's children. Yehoshaphat's children suffered. And God rejected. And God rejected the all of the seed of Israel, and he afflicted them by his name Biyat Shosim, and he gave them into the hands of those who bespoiled them. Adar Shed Hishlicham Yiponav, until he cast them out from before him. By the way, here there are words that are very, very similar to words that we learned all the way back there in Sefer Shoftim, God giving Jews over into the hands of Shosim. Ki Kora Yisrael Me'al Beit David. What's interesting is because Yisrael had torn itself off from the house of David by Amlichu at Yerovam ben Nevat, and they made Yerovam ben Nevat king. Now, remember, go ahead. Why blame them when it was Achia Hashiloni in the name of God who made Yerovam ben Nevat king? The only thing is, God had one reason for doing it, But theirs was another reason. In other words, there were those in Israel who did want to tear themselves off from the spiritual center of Jerusalem. So even though this was wrought by God, but that which is wrought by God, man can have his own intention. And for that, he's punished. Vayadach is the way it's read. He pushed the children of Israel away from behind God, and he caused them to sin a great sin. I'm not going to repeat that which I said a few weeks ago, the Shir on Chata'ah. The Shir on Chata'ah, meaning that, as we pointed out, a chet is a sin of commission, a chet that one does, a chata'ah is a sin of omission, something that people should have done and they didn't do. They should have objected, they should have spoken out, and they didn't. When the Bnei Yisrael went and all the sins of Yerovim that he did, and they did not turn away from it, until God removed Israel from before his face. As he said, he warned them in advance, through all of his servants, the prophets, by Yigel Yisrael, and Israel was exiled from upon his land to Ashur Ara Yamaz until this day. Alright, let's go further. ויובי מלך אשר מבבל ומקוטו מאבו מחמות וספר פעים ויושב בורי שומרון תחת בני ישראל וירשו את שומרון וישו הרי. Here is a fascinating, very fascinating story. The king of Asher, his policy was transfer. Yeah. You see, an Israeli calls it transfer. All right. Because they put the accent on the last syllable, regardless of what language it is. So transfer. By us, it's transfer. You understand? Transfer. That was his policy. His policy was to move populations. The king of Asher moved Jews out of Eretz Israel, and he brought another population to settle the land. The king of Asher brought from Babel and from Kuta and Ava and Hamat and Svarvayim, Vayoshev Ba'arei Shomron, and he settled in this land, in the cities of Shomron, Tachat B'nai Yisrael, in the place of the children of Israel, Vayirshu et Shomron, Vayeshvu Bi'areha. And they inherited, they took over Shomron, and they lived in her cities. Vayehi B'tchilas Shiftom Shom, and it came to pass at the beginning of the time that they lived there, Lo Yaru et Hashem, those people who had come there did not fear God. Vayishalach Hashem behem et ha'arayot, vayiyu hargim behem. Unusual thing happened. Lions came down from the, from where? Where the lions come from? No God! Huh? Who? Arayos?
What do
we need? We need the lions? What do we need lions for?
That's
very bad, Malcolm. We watch what we say over here. We don't say such things over here. Yes.
Yeah.
But watch, you'll see right away. Yeah. Hashem means only the God of Israel. They didn't fear the God of Israel. So in other words, what? They're a bunch of goyim. So goyim has to fear the God of Israel. So watch, that's the whole story. By Yehor Gimbam, the lions were killing them. By Yom Ruh Melech Asher Leimor. Hagoyim asher higlita v'toshen v'orei shomron lo yodu et mishpat elehei ha'aretz. Vayishalach bam et ha'arayot v'hinam nimitim otam kashen einam yodim et mishpat elehei ha'aretz. It was said to the king of Asher saying, you know what the problem over here is? The god of this land has a manner of conduct and they don't know it. Mishpat elokei ha'aretz. This is another place where the word mishpat has its broader meaning, the manner of conduct. It doesn't have to mean judgment or justice or witnesses or court or lawyers. There is a manner of conduct that's called mishpat, and there is a mishpat of a keharetz, and they don't know how to serve him, and therefore he has sent the lions against them, and the lions are killing them. Vayitzav melech Ashur leimor, the king of Ashur commanded, saying, Halichu shomar yachad me'akohanim asher iklitim misham, bring there one of the kohanim who had been sent into exile. V'yelchu v'yeshu shom, they should go and they should live there. V'yorein et mishpat elokei haaretz, and he shall teach them. Again, for the third time, we have these three words going together. There is mishpat elokei haaretz. What was the whole, what's all of Perek Yitzayim? Perek Yitzayim is, if you don't keep the mishpat elokei haaretz, the conduct of elokei haaretz, then you know what's going to be? There will be mishpat that will come from Elokei Haaretz. That Elokei, the God of the land, is going to bring judgment.
They brought one of the Kohanim came that had been exiled from Shomron, and he settled in Beit El, and he taught them how to fear God. What really happened was the following. They did both. They served Hashem Elokei Yisrael Elokei Haaretz at the same time that they served their own gods that they had brought with them from elsewhere.
How they served Hashem?
What?
I mean, how come they served Hashem? What? Bringing carbonyl? They have no connection with carbonyl and Hashem. Is it morally that they served Hashem?
Well, let's see. In other words, what's really going to happen is they are going to start picking up all sorts of mitzvahs. The Gemara, first of all, in the Gemara, there is the big question, Kutin. They were given the name Kutin. One of the places that they came from was Kuta in Pasuk Chavdal. So first of all, the Gemara has a shaila, Kutim Geirei Arayote or Geirei Emet. The Gemara in a number of places asks, was the Kutim Geirei Emet, were they real Geirim? Did they become real Geirim? Or were they Geirei Arayot? They were converts because of the lions. Because of the lions. In other words, what is their status in Jewish law? You think the question of Mihu Yehudi only started in this country in the last 30, 40 years? Mihu Yehudi was a question that was asked with regard to the Kutim. The Gemara also tells us a number of other things about the Kutim. Mitzvahs that they adopted, they were even more careful than Klal Yisrael was with regard to the mitzvahs. But there's no place that it says that they adopted all mitzvahs. Selective. Right. There were mitzvahs that they adopted. I mean, we know about that too. And mitzvahs that they never adopted. But those that they adopted, they were very, very frum. In terms of their beliefs, the pasuk over here says that they it was shituf. Shituf means God plus some other deity. By the way, the Shulchan Aruch, our Shulchan Aruch says that the goyim are permitted shituf. Now the question is, for example, what is Catholicism in halacha? There are many who hold that Catholicism in halacha is absolute. Catholicism already borders on or is pretty close to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry. What about the Protestant religions? So it's really a matter there, it's a matter of shituf. The two together. Yeshu plus Lav Lelef Alfi Alof Mardomus to Rebbeinu Shalelef. The Ramon Shulchan Aruch says that a non-Jew is permitted shituf. He can believe in God plus some other deity. That's really what's happening over here with the Kutim. So Vayi Yoisim Goy Goy Elohav. Each one had their own god. Vayanichu, and they placed in the Beit Habamot in the house of the high places. Asher also Hashem Leonim. The Forish over here, Das Mikra, says this is the only place in all of Tanakh where the word Shomronim is used, the name Shomronim, and over here Shomronim refers to the Jewish people. Shomronim today has a completely different meaning. There is a group of a few hundred Shomronim that still live in Eretz Yisrael. Yes?
The Shomronim from today
Yes, the Shomronim of today are descendants in some form or another of the Kutim who came here. They were the Samaritans. The ones who bring a carbon Pesach on Har Gerizim over there and Har Evel, they had no tradition of Torah Sheba'al Peh. They had certain mitzvahs of Torah Shebichtav, some that they fulfilled and others that they rejected completely. Goy Goy Ba'areim, each nation. Remember, a whole bunch of nations were listed back there. People of different nations that were brought to settle here in Eretz Yisrael. Ikutim became the name. In other words, instead of Chazal calling them the Avim and the Hamasim and the Sfarvayim, etc., and it may very well be because Kuta was a larger area, and the fact is like this. I think when it says from Babel, in other words, in general they were from Babel, and then the individual places were Kuta, Ava, Hamat, but it seems that the name that stuck to them was the
Kuta.
Oh yeah, it all refers to all of them. V'anshei Babel, the people of Babel, Osu et Sukkot Benot. The Sukkot Benot is a Lashon Kodesh term to describe the name of their local god. The Akkadian Babylonian god who's known as Sakud. One is Sakud, one is called Banitu, Banot, Vanshe Kut also at Ner Gal. They had a god who was called Ner Gal, Vanshe Chamat also at Ashima, Boha Avim also Nivchaz Vetarkov. Don't ask me about the big Zion, Sarah. Vasvar Vayim, Sorfimet Benehem Ve'esh. The Svarvayim, we're talking about all sorts of ancient deities, about a great deal that, you know, this is the kind of thing for historians. Vasvarvayim, Sarfim et Bnei Ba'esh, La Adramelech, Va'anamelech, Elohe Svarvayim, Adramelech and Anamelech were the gods of Svarvayim. Vayiudeim et Hashem, you hear? They feared God, the God of Israel, the Elokei Ha'aretz. Some of them made for themselves priests of the Bamot. By Yosu Lehem the Beit HaBamot, and they brought sacrifices in the house of the Bamot. Et Hashem, I'm Pasuk 33. The definitive Pasuk is now. Et Hashem hayu yedeyim ve'et Eloheim hayu otim. They feared God, but they worshipped their gods. Kemishpat ha'goyim asher tiglu. Kimishpat Hagoyim Asher Higlu Otam Misham. Like the nations. Now, this is a very interesting pasuk. Yeah. The pasuk could mean two things. Who are they talking about? Which nations? Kimishpat Hagoyim Asher Higlu Otam Misham. It could very well be sort of a condemnation of the Jews who had once lived in Shomron. Do you know what the Kutim were now doing? They were doing exactly what the Jews had been doing in Shomron before they were exiled there. What were Jews doing? They were worshipping both God and Baal. Yeah, very good. Well, she's so excited today. Until today, the Kutim are doing what they originally did. Einam yedayim et Hashem, veinam osim kechukatam uchemishpatam vechatora vechamitzot asher tziva. I'm sorry, asher tziva Hashem et bnei Yaakov asher som shmo Yisrael. Very difficult passage, but all right. Ad hayom hazeh. What he's really, according to many of the first, what he's really talking about is the Shomronim.
Seems to contradict the verse.
Yeah, watch. First of all, let me read a few sections on the Tav Mikra over here. He says, the Ad Hayom Hazer. Ad Hayom Hazer usually has, it could have two meanings, up until today. One means until the time that the Sefer was written. Malachim is written about 150 years later. Malachim is written by Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu hasn't even been born. Ad Hayom Hazeh can also mean the following. In other words, the history was written at the time, then it was put together later by Yirmiyahu into an entire Sefer. So the Ad Hayom Hazeh can mean the earlier date. The Ad Hayom Hazeh can mean the later date. What he says from Pasuk, we're going to see from a Pasuk at the end of this Perek, Olef min ha-katuv b'chatimat ha-parsha. you'll take a look at Pasuk Mem Aleph. The last pasuk in this chapter, 41. You see, some people need the English and some people need the... All right. Look at the last pasuk. Vayiyu agrim ha'ele yireim et Hashem. These nations feared God, ve'et psileim ha'yuotim, and they served their idols, gam b'neihem, u'b'nei b'neihem, their children and their children's children, kasher osu avotam, heim osim, ad hayom hazeh, as their fathers did, they do up until this day. Now, as we say, the up until this day can either mean at the time that the Sefer is finally written, or at the time that the history is being written, which is before that. Back to our pasuk now, pasuk 34. So he says, from that, that which is written at the end of the parasha, what emerges is that our perek over here, the story, was written in the third generation of Churban Shomron. Because what was that? That pasuk at the end of the parak said, B'nehem, O B'nei B'nehem, are still doing the same thing. That means the original writing of the story took place in the third generation after Jews had been sent into to exile. Now, when it says, Ad hayom hazeh heim osim, they are doing kam mishpatim harishonim, the Arayom Hazeh tells us what we're talking about. Three generations down the line, during the period of the three generations. Who are the Heim Osim? Who are we talking about in this pasuk? Ad Hayom Hazeh, Heim Osim, they are doing... Let's let they go unexplained for a minute. They are doing Kamishpatim HaRishonim, like that which they originally did. Einam Yireim Et Hashem, they don't fear God. Veinam osim kechukotam ukemishpatam vechatorah vechamitzvah asher tzivah Hashem et bnei Yaakov asher som shmo Yisrael. So the Ralbag, for example, one of the Mefarshim says, who are the Heim Osim? Who are we talking about in this pasuk? We're talking about the Jewish people that talked in this pasuk. La'anisharim, there were still Jews even after the exile. There were still Jews who remained here and there, dispersed throughout the cities of Shomron. Obviously, when you look at the end of this pasuk, it's obvious that we are talking about the Jewish people, because the end of the pasuk says, "Kamitzvah Asher Tzivah Hashem et Bnei Yaakov," that God had commanded the sons of Yaakov, Asher Som Shmo Yisrael. So what it means, therefore, is here we are talking about the Jews. They continue to conduct themselves kamishpatim harishonim as they had conducted themselves before, from the time of Yerovam ben Nevat.
But then you're contrasting the Kutim who feared Hashem and the Jews who did not fear Hashem.
You're right. Oh yeah, so I'm taking it right through the question. We'll have to see the Mitzvah in a moment. Wait, let me just finish the part. She says, "Einam yireim et Hashem." They don't fear God. Yirah shleima. Einam yireim et Hashem does not necessarily have to mean that they don't fear Him at all. Einam yireim et Hashem can mean that they don't fear God completely. Ve'einam odim otol abadon. They don't serve Him alone, as Jews were commanded to do, and they don't keep the mitzvahs and the Torah as God had commanded Yaakov, Asher Som Shmo Yisrael, and had changed his name to Yisrael. Why does this appear in the pasuk? I mean, the name Yaakov is mentioned very, very often in Tanakh. And it doesn't say Yaakov, whose name he had changed to Yisrael. I believe that this addition over here is sort of one of the keys to understand what's really happening in the whole parasha. When God changes the name of Yaakov to Yisrael, why does He call him Yisrael? When is he? Because he had struggled with the Malach. He struggled with the Malach who was Saro Shel Esav, the Saro of Esav, and he prevailed over him. He rose above him. Therefore, Ki Sarita, you were an officer, you prevailed. You rose above the level of Yaakov and you became Yisrael. The real sin of Klal Yisrael is that they did not live up to God's expectations. In other words, if one would ask the question, on a practical, real level, were the Jews so bad? When you read the Perek, you get the feeling that these people were terrible. So this is one of my recurrent themes. In other words, let's say if we are to compare ourselves today, we may be left with the impression that we're tzaddikim gedolim. They were a bunch of terrible rishayim. So I'm telling you, let's say their chata'ah gedolah, the chata'ah gedolah that they did is from the word chata'ah. What does the word chata'ah mean? What does the word chet mean? The word chet, huh? No, you just take it easy, you know. I have to get these Americans over here. What does chet mean? You get that? In addition to that, but where does the word chet, what? To miss the mark, that's the point. L'hachatiyat ha-matara, if I'm shooting an arrow at a target, and I miss the mark, that's what a chet is. To miss the mark. So now, to miss the mark means that there was a goal, there was an objective, there was a kivud, and just they missed the mark. Yaakov was Yaakov, but then he became Yisrael. They didn't rise to the real greatness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected of them. And therefore they had to go into exile, and they're going to go through a whole process that is going to, in some way or other, prepare them someday for that greater accomplishment. And God made with them a covenant. And he commanded them, saying, "Lo tiru alehim achedim, don't fear other gods, and don't bow down to them, and don't serve them, and don't bring sacrifice to them." What pasuk does this remind you of? This is the Aseret HaDibrot, "Lo tishtachav alehem, lo tavdeh." Ki imet Hashem asher helet kameret Mitzrayim. Here you see, obviously, they were talking about by the Jewish people, only God who had brought you out of the land of Egypt, the Korah, God, all of Israel, and into your ototiro, with great strength and with an outstretched arm, him you should fear. Velo tishtachavu, and to him you should bow down. Velo tizbachu, and to him you should bring sacrifices. V'etachukim v'etamishpatim, v'atorah v'mitzvah shekotav lachem, tishmirun la'asot kol ha'yamin, the chukim and the mishpatim, the statutes and the laws, the Torah and the mitzvah, that he had written for you, you should keep it all your day, all the days. Velo tiru alehim acherim, don't fear other gods. God told them that the covenant that I made with you, you shall not forget. Don't fear other gods. This is already the third time it's being said. If you really want to understand, there was a parasha that I gave some months ago. No, maybe 2 months ago, no more than 2 months ago. That in some way can make it a little bit easier to understand. There was something so exceptional about this country. You remember, this was the shiur that I gave that was based on the Sefer of Noga HaRuveni of Naot Kedumim. Why were Jews warned time and time again not to do anything that in a sense is worship of the gods of this land? Why did it occur to them? Like the abominations of the nations here, don't go in their ways. So we gave a shiur, it was a whole shiur, in which the point that was made was that there was something very seductive about Eretz Yisrael. The climactic conditions of Eretz Yisrael was such that man could slide easily into some form of idol worship. They had come from Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu himself describes it in Torah that in Mitzrayim they didn't depend on the rain that comes from heaven. They They had the water of the Nile. But in Eretz Yisrael, the conditions were completely different. And for that matter, the climatic conditions of Eretz Yisrael are different nearly than any other country on the face of this earth. Moshe Rabbeinu tells it to Klal Yisrael in Sefer Devarim. He tells them that the land that I'm bringing you to is a land that limitar hashamayim tishteh mayim. It drinks from the waters of the heaven. Which means really that the farmer is completely dependent on forces that are seemingly beyond his ability to control. He has no control. Most probably the most destructive thing for human personality is the feeling of lack of control. I'm not a bala boss on my life. Everybody wants to feel that I am, you know, I have my life planned out and I know exactly what I'm going to do and how I'm going to go about it. And we don't take into consideration the unexpected or the dramatic change or the tragic. We don't take that into consideration. Therefore, when it comes, God forbid when it comes, it's extremely disorienting. They came into a land, and that's what we say in Shema. Oh, Yom Shamar, you understand? Oh, Yom Shamar, you're going to keep the mitzvahs, I'm going to give you rain in its time. If you're not going to keep the mitzvahs, there won't be rain. I mean, this is the most unnatural kind of nature to contend with. The shear that we had given then specifically related to the period between Pesach and Shavuos. That the period between Pesach and Shavuos was one that was always the grain of the field and the fruits and the trees needed completely different kind of weather patterns. And they needed completely different kind of weather patterns in very precise measure. They needed a number of hot days and a number of cool days, a number of warm, wet days and a number of dry days. And that's why during the course of the period from Pesach until Shavuos, you don't know from one day to the next what the weather is going to be like, which left men without a sense of control. And without a sense of control, there was always this seduction to move maybe there is. We're talking about a time that idolatry prevailed in the world. Yes, maybe there is mishpat. In our case here, it's Elokei Haaretz. But what was idolatry all about? Idolatry was all about the fact that different countries and different places had their own idols. So yeah, it may be difficult for us to understand. We're going to learn about Menasheh. Menasheh is going to be the worst of the kings of Yehuda. 55 years, Gachman, and it's on the Churban that he's going to make. And one of the Amoraim, it said that Menasheh doesn't have a portion of the world to come. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that he appeared to that rabbi in a dream, and he told him, "Oh God, would you have been living in my time, you would have picked up your cloak and you would have run. You would have run to worship idols." And in great measure, very often, the worshipping of idols, the Elohim Achedim, didn't necessarily represent a rejection of Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Just as early idolatry that is described by the Rambam was not a rejection of God the Creator, but they felt that, listen, if I'm going to give honor to the forces that God has created in nature, this is another way of serving Him. Wait, the Malk is going crazy. I think she needs a vacuum. Yeah, God, what is the Malk? I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, she, that's, I'm sorry. I was looking. Yes, her quota is over. Numerous clauses. Okay, Sarah. Go ahead, Sarah. Come on. No. Yeah, go ahead. No, don't going back. No, forward. Forward.
Well, lately,
In other words, I said already, I created a monster, and I have to contend with it. I understand, I know that. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with it. Bela, don't make it worse. Because I want that.
I say something on a related thing, but it's bothering me now.
Yeah?
The sin of the golden calf. An understanding that they were worshiping that very much like this.
So remember,
the
sins of the golden calf, there are three opinions what it was.
I know, but one of the opinions was that it was like this. One of the opinions that they still may have feared God, but they wanted something.
They wanted something. That's from Yehuda HaLevi and the Kuzri. They wanted something to. In other words, that means the Rav Yehuda HaLevi in the Kuzri says that the Egel was not a sin of idolatry, it was a sin of graven image. Now there's a big difference between graven image and idolatry. Graven image really was worship of God, but there was something solid that you could look at, that you could touch, that you could feel, that you could caress, that represented to them God. Their difficulty was serving an invisible entity. So why is it bothering you now? That's a different opinion.
The owner, that, he's so strong. And I don't know, I'm just saying that there seems to be understanding here. There seems to be a little Rachmanus.
Yeah, but the owner was still pretty strong. They were reptiles.
You meant there was something that I said last week that I felt as I learned the whole parak. And I have a number of other prakim in Tanakh about which I have the same feeling. God, so to speak, seems to be pleading with the reader, I want you to understand me. I think you don't appreciate what I went through. How difficult, this is God speaking, how difficult it was for me to do this. But I'm telling you, I had to do it. Do you understand the feeling that I have?
Let's say that in this case, the interpretation is that it was idol worship, although it may not have been told by the Jews. You're saying that it was idol worship?
Number one, it was not everybody.
No, I know.
And it may not have been idol worship altogether. It may have been graven image.
Is the onus different?
For which? Between idolatry? Absolutely! Oh, big difference. Idolatry is death penalty. Graven image is a law for which a negative commandment for which there could be malchus. But when it's done on a national scale, so that's why, I mean, I don't want to avoid your question, but the next pasuk is that which explains it. Ki imet Hashem Elokeichem tiro, you should fear only God your God. For who yatzil etchem miyad? And he will save you from the hands of all your enemies. What they were really trying to do was they had not recognized that they are a supernatural people and not a natural people. If they would have been a natural people, if they are part of the ebb and flow of history, then you enter into alliances, you go to Asher, and you go to Mitzrayim, and you go to Babel, and you enter into treaties, and you do all sorts of things, and maybe if need be, even show some respect to some power of nature. That's all if you are a natural people. If you're a Yaakov people alone, but you're a Yaakov people who was called Yisrael, raised if so above the natural, you are able to contend with angels and emerge victorious. So therefore your life and the way you're going to conduct yourself in Eretz Yisrael has to be on a completely different level. You have to understand. You have to have the sense of trust that, you know what? That Rebbein Shlilin that you can't see and that you can't touch, he's the one that's going to save you and nothing else. Is it an easy task? Has true faith, you know, everybody talks about the weather and bitachon. Mm-hmm. And I think nobody does too much about it. You know, you have to have bitachon. No. Usually, the people who talk about bitachon are guys that, you know, has an apartment and a house and has a pension, has loads of bitachon. And he's usually telling a fella that doesn't own an apartment and doesn't have a pension and doesn't have money in the bank, have bitachon. You understand? Okay. You know, everybody talks about bitachon. Very few people are able to achieve what bitachon really means. Real trust and faith in God. Because at the same time that we talk bitachon, we want to make certain that everything is taken care of. And then it's easy sort of to talk about bitachon. What the Rebbeinu is asking of Klal Yisrael is not something very, very simple. It's an extremely difficult assignment. You're surrounded by enemies in the Middle East. I'm talking about the ancient Middle East. Now it's we have no problems. But we're in the new Middle East. So he calls upon them. I mean, king after king was going to Mitzrayim or going to Ashur or going to Babel. I mean, they were entering into agreements and alliances. Now there's nothing, listen to this sentence. There's nothing wrong with an alliance as you don't have, as long as you don't have reliance on it. Reliance has to be on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. But certainly within the normal course of events, just like you have to have an army and you have to have all sorts of other things, you enter into alliances. There's nothing wrong with alliances. But when you trust and depend on them, that's a problem. Sarah, what is it you're waiting to ask? You didn't want to ask another question?
No.
Good. Oh, so the chaf, we'll worry about that. Yes, oh boy. Malka, she couldn't control herself. Yes, go ahead.
Yaakov in Israel.
Yeah, okay.
Bechol makom where it's written Yaakov, which the verse is from Ekev. What is Ekev in English?
Heal.
It means that Am Israel is like you just explained.
The masses of people.
Yes. But it is written
Israel, it always represents
Hashem, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. The failure of the Jewish people to rise to God's expectations, His standards. Right. They didn't listen. He's talking not only about Jews all along, but even those who remained afterwards. They didn't learn from history. They're doing exactly what they did at the beginning. These nations, they feared God and their idols they served. Their fathers did. They did up until this day. We'll have a little bit more to say about this yet, but I just want to give you the last pasuk is talking about the Shomronim, the Kutim, the new ones who have moved in. And in the middle, he talked about Jews didn't learn. And in other words, if you're a Jew living in the cities of Shomron and you see what has happened to your neighbors, the Goyim, who've been brought here from elsewhere, that they have come to realize that there is a God of this land. And you can't cross him. And so the Jews should have learned from this. And he didn't learn.
Jews didn't say the same thing. I don't know.
They did the same thing as the
Goyim.
They did the same thing.
Yes, so they didn't learn. They didn't learn from all of the events of history and of it. That the
Goyim feared Hashem.
Fear Hashem, and they didn't even fear Hashem, yes. Because it said, whom do they fear? They feared Elohim Achedim. That's why he says to them three times, Lo tiru Elohim Achedim. You're right. In a sense, the balance was in favor of the Kutim. All right. This is for... maybe I'll give this homework to Sarah. We're going to have about a chapter or two in Malachim that's going to talk about Chizkiyahu. There will be four chapters in Divrei Hayom that are going to talk about Chizkiyahu. The real greatness and the achievements of Chizkiyo are really told to us in Divrei Hayom and not in Malachim. Oh God. 28, 29. I think it has to start with 28. Is it 28? Yes! Just a moment. No, wait. Maybe I... 29. No, I made it. the last four words in 28 are Vayimloch Yechizkiyahu b'no tachtav. His son Yechizkiyahu. Yeah. So it's 29, 30, 31, 32. And they're big, four chapters. Four chapters are going to deal with Chizkiyahu. Not only are four chapters here going to deal with Chizkiyahu, Chizkiyahu appears in a number of chapters of Yeshayahu.
That's why I asked. Usually that way, then I can't find the other reference.
So we'll give you all of the references. In other words, we're going to... I want to concentrate on Chizkiyahu because until the Churban, Chizkiyahu is going to be the great king, and Chizkiyahu is also, unfortunately, a great missed opportunity. And the extent to which there was an opportunity that was missed in the days of Chizkiyahu, and who is responsible for the missed opportunity, that's really what we have to talk about. Chizkiyahu is going to be one of the great tzaddikim. A great deal is going to be written about him. Yes.
I really waited for the end of the sermon before you.
What do you mean? You read ahead?
Back to America. I really waited Israel to be exiled before Israel.
Yes, go ahead.
Shlomo was given the punishment that there could have been changed in that.
A negative point?
Well, supposedly, and it's true,
but
that's
after that.
A
negative point can always be changed.
A negative prophecy can always be changed. Otherwise, then you know what? Then the words of the Nevi'im are one big joke. So what's the Rebbeinu saying in this chapter that I sent Nevi'im to you every day and you didn't do tshuva? It would all have been a joke. If the die is cast, so what's the point of sending prophets? Then it's all over. They could have. When I talk about missed opportunities, that's what I mean. There were opportunities for tshuva. Yisrael, absolutely. You have to believe that. If you don't believe that, then Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yecheskel, or Hosea, Amos, and Micha I'm afraid to say the word. I mean, they're phonies. They're not speaking the truth. They're telling Jews to do tshuva, and if you do tshuva, everything is going to be great. And got to be that way.
They spoke to you.
No. After I said Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yecheskel, I said Hosea, Amos, and Micha, just so that I would have an answer, because I knew that you would ask that question. Right? But Hosea, Amos, and Micha, they spoke to Yisrael. Where Chizkiyahu appears in Isaiah? Chapters 36, 37, 38, 39. Is it there in 36? I don't have my... There are four... In other words, in Yeshayahu, there are four chapters that are nearly all prose, not prophetic poetry. Those four chapters. I haven't forgotten you, Reva. Huh? Good. But my lucky. Wait a minute. Wait. I didn't answer Reva's question. Reva was asking that the Archia Hashiloni, she's asking, maybe they're related. Were you asking, could the split of the kingdom have been avoided? Did you ask that?
I don't remember. I didn't ask that. I said one half dollar. Not the split. No.
No, you didn't ask about the splits. Reva is talking. You're talking about that.
He asked the split. He didn't discuss the split. The punishment is that they would disappear. Wasn't that the
thing? But what about the split? Could that have been avoided?
Yes, sure.
Oh, because if one reads the psukim before, Achi Ashilani over there. What was it in chapter 11, 12, 12 11 or 12 in Malachim Aleph? Achi Ashilani comes to Yeravam and he tells him, "I'm going to give you I'm going to give you 10 tribes. There was no prophecy there. Well, there was a prophecy there. The prophecy over there was to Shlomo HaMelech that if you will follow him, then your kingdom will be firmly established. And if not, then anything can happen. Then anything can happen.
But it's not done because of the sin of Shlomo. It's done because he wasn't a smart person. He listened and listened.
No, no, no. She's talking about Rechavam.
She
said that's a classic example of everything we're talking about. Because there the Navi tells us the immediate, what seems to be factual reason of why the kingdom was split, because Rechavam acted with stupidity. But is that the whole reason? You know what that is? That's like saying that the First World War broke out because of the assassination of Archduke, what was his name again? Archduke Ferdinand in
Sarajevo.
Yes. That's where it was? Okay. Ali. The match. It was the match. So I'm saying Rechavam's stupid answer when he tells them, you should know, my father beat you achreis with whips, and I'm going to beat you with thorns and thistles. That was the assassination of the Archduke. In other words, they deserve Shlomo by his conduct. By the way, I'm saving this for a little later. Of all of the kings in Melachim, not many does it say about them Vayasu of Yehuda. Kings of Yehuda doesn't say about many of them Vayasu Adabi and Yashem, but it does say it about Shlomo. Which means the split of the kingdom was clearly related to the sins or the mistakes. Let me use better the word. I like the word mistake better than sin. Related to the mistakes of Shlomo. How did it in fact happen on the ground? Bashetach? That was the fact that Rechavam acted stupidly. Why do you think Rechavam acted stupidly? Was there divine intervention that Rechavam should act stupidly? Of course there was divine intervention over there. By the way, there are times at which God in fact does takes away free will. Therein lies the punishment itself. The punishment is, because you've done something wrong, I am going to relieve you of your free will. That's part of the punishment. Chavim says that in the... Chavim says that in the... by power, he says it in the Shmona Prakul Maharanda. You're right. There are times when, because you have chosen incorrectly, you have abused and misused your free will, so your onus, your punishment is, yes, that you're going to be relieved of your free will. Rechavam acted stupidly. There's no question about it. And yes, I'm ready even to take the risk of saying he could not have acted otherwise. How do you like that? He couldn't have acted otherwise. I'll tell you. The fact is, it was so stupid to do what he did. Even a stupid person wouldn't do it unless he was relieved of his free will. Listen. I'll give you a simple mashal. The fact is, Binyamin Netanyahu knows how to handle David Levy. Now, to know how to handle David Levy takes brilliance and genius. Anachnu yudidim tovim. Anachnu roim ayin v'ayin. We love him. I like him. He's good. Oh, yeah. No problem. He knows exactly how to do it. Now, what would I do? I'm a hot-blooded guy. I'd say, David Levy, take your whole bunch of them. Go back to Beth Shan. You're a father from Morocco. Leave me alone. I can't handle your ego. I've had enough.
Are you turning off?
All right, but... He doesn't understand English, right?
He wants to be well.
Look, you understand the... What I mean to say is that if Netanyahu, I'll tell you, if you read, for example, today the quotes in the papers about what Netanyahu said about about David Levy. Certainly nothing like what Sara Netanyahu said about other people. But he said very nice things about David Levy. And in other words, he knows how to do it. He knows how to deal with people. Rehavam made a terrible mistake. Yeah, you're right. But then he made, that was a mistake, but now he's a prime minister. The fact is that he knows that he's going to resolve the issue. In another week from now, the issue will have been forgotten, unless, of course, there'll be a secret meeting between Sora and Arafat that he didn't know about. I don't know. The point is, Sarah's question, this Sarah, the real Sarah, your question was a good question. And that's why I want to point out that Adarabba, the fact that it made no sense to say what Rehavam said, most probably anybody with any degree of basic intelligence in government would not have done what he did. He was asking for trouble. He was not asking for it. Means, therefore, that this is already something that has been an influence that has come from on high. That's what it is. Yes, go ahead. By the way, you know, this is another, I just want to tell you, this is another frustrating day. The whole shit that I had prepared to say today, I didn't say yet. I didn't begin it yet. Yeah, go ahead.
Moshe prepared
Yoshua.
David prepared Shlomo.
David, I know what she's going to ask.
Did Shlomo prepare his?
Yes, yeah, so, you know, I get worried over here when you ask a question like that. In other words, brilliant fathers can end up having very mediocre sons. Yes. I don't like that. Because, you know why? I'll tell you why. I know you said it. I saw it written all over your face. I know that's what you had in mind. And I'll tell you why. You know what do you know what we're going to... You know what we're going to have now? Ahaz, king of Yehuda, was a Rosh Hashanah Shoyim. His son is going to be Yechizkiyo Tzadik Shevet Tzadikim. And do you know what's going to be with Yechizkiyo's son? Menashe is going to be the worst of the Rishoyim. So what am I supposed to say? It's going to be a real... No, it's going to be a real question. A real question. So the psychologist, of course, will say, you know why Chizkiyo was a tzaddik? Because how can a kid aggravate his father of Hashem more than by being a tzaddik? You know? In other words, when a psychologist is going to get his hands on a puzzle, Tanakh, you understand? So that for everybody, children are always aggravating parents. So therefore, Menashe, you understand, is going to aggravate the kishkas out of Yechizkiyo by being gay. That's not the way it works. We're going to have to look at it from a completely different point of view. So you're going to ask me what? That a pasha deyid over there can have tremendous knockers from his children. This is what I want to talk about now. Yeah, but Chizkiyo is not going to have Yiddish and Nachas. You understand, Chizkiyo is a tzaddik yisod olam, is going to have a son called Menashe. 55 years he's going to make a korban in Klal Yisrael. No, I don't know what I'm saying yet. But
what's your question?
Yeah, what was your question?